Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee. The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. We got David over there hitting the switches, making this thing sound right. I got a visitor this week. Got one of my college teammates here. Free safety, Nate. I almost said Nate Williams. How'd I do that? Nate Floyd Ingram. I know your name, man. I know your name. If you want to go ahead and give him to Barry White, you could give it to him. You could give it to him.
Good afternoon, everybody.
He hit it with the Barry White. Hey, man, I'm in good spirits. You know why? Because this is game week, and this is an opportunity to finally see these guys in game situations. We had the depth chart come out, the unofficial depth chart. Few things of interest here. Obviously, you know, Treylon Burks not listed with the starters, and there was a big thing about that. We'll get into that later. But, you know, he is obviously going to be someone who's going to get significant playing time. I don't think that's something to worry about. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, Burks, Kyle Phillips, seeing these guys in some game action. That's going to be really good to see them. A few other things with the depth chart that you look at, Aaron Brewer and Jamarco Jones. You know, David, that competition there at left guard, I think Aaron Brewer has pretty much sealed that. I'm not going to say seal it, but I think he has a stronghold on it. And it's just when you hear Mike Vrabel talk about certain players and when he is as complimentary of them as he was, and he called him, he's tougher than a $2 steak. Jeffrey Simmons.
I think that's the best compliment you can get.
Yeah, like it doesn't. And Brewer said he had one of those, and he said that's pretty tough. So it's a good example of him. Jeffrey Simmons got into some of the things that are working really well for him, being able to go against Brewer, because let's face it, this is a guy, a guard we're talking about, 290 pounds. And that's what he's listed.
Yeah.
I would say after a few camp practices, he's probably closer to 275 way you sweat out there, especially in this Nashville heat and humidity, he's probably lost some weight. But nevertheless, he didn't lose quickness. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Simmons said is really working in his favor because he shed some weight and he wants to work on that footwork, work on that quickness and that agility, not at the sacrifice of the bull rush that he has.
But exactly.
Going against Aaron Brewer is giving him a good opportunity to do that. And I think if you go back, was it week 10 of the 2020 season?
Yeah.
Brewer did a really good job against the Ravens. And we're talking about an interior Calais Campbell.
Yes. I mean, ooh.
Listen, that's one of the biggest people I've ever seen.
He's huge. What is he, like 6'8"?
6'8", 6'7", in that area. Like, and he's big. But Brewer held his own against that. And even one of Derrick Henry had a jump cut off of a jump cut. I remember it. And when he had that second jump cut, Aaron Brewer sprung him for that long run. I believe that was the one where that was in the divisional game when they when they beat the Ravens. Marcus Peters ran him down.
Yes,
it was a different. It was a long run.
So
Aaron Brewer, I think is someone to take note of. I feel like there's starting to be some separation there between Brewer and Jamarco Jones. Another one that's really stands out to me is Dylan Raidens and Nicholas Petit-Ferrer. And I didn't think that he was going to come in and be someone that was going to compete as much with Raidens as he has. But I will say this, when he is out there, there's a different punch. His punch is stronger. You see him moving people a little bit more. So I would imagine the rushing attack is going to be better. They're both working with, you know, the starting unit, getting significant reps. That is probably going to be the biggest competition. In my mind, just as far as like watching that one play out, you got the running backs too, man. Like it's, I mean, you tell, but Dontrell Hilliard's in there, but Jordan Wilkins, Trenton Cannon, Julius Chestnut. It's funny, you know, Julius Chestnut is a guy, he's what, 5'11", 230, something in that ballpark. Yeah. But his feet, he has really good feet. And that's why if you watch practice with me, any of the reporters that I watch, I said Natron Means when he carries the ball, because, you know, fat guy with fast feet. They're not really fat, but
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
like
but just, bigger guys.
It's a figure of speech.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
But I do like watching him, and he actually had a run. What was it? Actually, it was off of a Brewer block. Brewer and Taylor Lewan, they were able to seal, and he bounced it outside, and he took off, and he was gone. Jordan Wilkins had a nice one too, where he had one. He ran to the right, and he cut back to the left, and he showed some acceleration too. So I want to see what these guys are able to do in the actual period where they could be tackled. Right?
Exactly.
Right now it's just thud. You just kind of stop on contact. So that's going to be good to watch. We know Derrick Henry isn't going to play, so we won't even get into that. Defensively, that's going to be – oh, wait a minute. Before we flip to the defensive side, Malik Willis. I really – all right. Let's stop with that. So Malik Willis is someone I think – and you know, I talked to Jarrett Stillman about it, and I told him, you know, you got to pump the brakes there on saying he stinks or he sucks or anything like that, because – you have to understand and appreciate the process, right? It's a ground up process for him. This is a guy who was not getting into the huddle frequently at Liberty. So even just taking the play call, relaying it to 10 other guys verbatim and clearly, because, you know, when you have a play call, there's trigger words, and different guys are listening for different trigger words. So you can't emphasize one more than another. You have to just relay that play correctly so everybody gets that trigger word and knows what they need to do. That was already something that they were working. And then you take that, and this process is what they call the operation. So you take that, and you transfer that to the mechanics, right? Marrying your footwork to your progressions. That's something that was really big. And we talked about that last week how you have to allow your feet to take you where you need to go with the football. And it has to be in sync with your eyes so you can reset and get the ball in the tight places. So that's something that he's processing.
Yeah.
And then a guy open at Liberty is a little different from a guy open in the NFL.
Exactly.
And especially when you look at these corners. You got Christian Fulton, Caleb Farley, Roger McCreary, who's playing outstanding football. You got Kevin Byard over top, Monty Hooker in the box, David Long, Zach Cunningham. We can go on and on. Yeah. All solid from a coverage perspective. So you're processing that. Okay, I got to make sure I put this ball in this spot where my receiver, I have to trust him to get there, and I have to throw it not blindly, but with the understanding that he's going to get there before a defender does. So you got that you're processing. And then on top of that, you're processing, oh, wait a minute, they rotated from the safety drop down from too deep down to the box. Now a single high. Oh, wait a minute, I can't throw that post in the middle of the field. Now I got to throw it more towards the hash opposite where the safety is. So there's so much going on.
So much to process for
exactly. It's only natural for things to slow down.
Yes.
So a lot of these people, they're right. They're absolutely right saying that the ball's coming out late sometimes. They're right saying that sometimes he just tucks it and doesn't do what he needs to do as far as getting rid of the football. All that will get better with time. And that's one of the things I talked to Malik about. The reps. The only thing that's going to make that better is reps. And he's continuing to get more and more reps. So I think it's just a matter of time before that falls into place. But we can't say the guy sucks, right?
Exactly.
Now. We can't say he stinks, right?
No,
now.
No.
Because right, wrong, or indifferent, this guy is one of a small percentage of people who are able to call themselves a professional football player. You got to respect that, first and foremost. He was a third-round pick. You got to respect just the fact that even most people had him with a first round grade.
Exactly.
So we'll see how that continues to develop. But I wanted to get on that about Malik Willis because I feel like he's getting kind of a bad rap. Are there areas for improvement? Absolutely.
Of course.
Does he have to start processing quicker and getting the ball out faster? Without a doubt. But we have to understand that there is so much talent there. He will make some throws where you're just like, wow. Now I see why he's the guy somebody wants eventually running their offense. So you just got to understand how that developmental process works. I really don't think that he's going to get much time this year, you know, and that's okay. That's okay. You use a third round pick on him. He's not taking up a bunch of salary cap space. Allow him to marinate. We're in a society where everything is all microwave, fast food, everything. You got to have it quickly. The best things come with time.
Exactly.
And I think that's what we're going to have with Malik Willis.
I liked on Stillman's show last week, I liked the saying you said about Malik Willis. He's not a
microwave dinner.
Microwave dinner. That was perfectly explained.
You got to just let it develop. Let it slow cook, and it's going to be good. So those are a few things. Depth chart-wise, defensively, I mean, there's some battles, right? DeMarcus Walker, Naquan Jones, Deshaun Hand, Laurell Murchison. Man, Murchison, like, that's a guy that he's just kind of falling by the wayside. And he was the fifth-round pick, and there was a point where that was somebody getting significant reps. I want to see how that whole situation develops with him because, like I said, there's a logjam. I mean, like I said, Walker, Jones, Kevin Strong, who's had a solid couple practices. Even Jaden Peavy has come in, Haskell Garrett. There are so many defensive linemen, so it's going to be tough to make that. Safety-wise, or even DB, period, Josh Kalu, he came in and he had an interception. He picked off Malik Willis. The ball was tipped. You know, on that play, Willis had, was it McMath? I think it was McMath that kind of hooked up on the left side. He came off of it and went to Reggie Robertson. And sometimes, because he's been targeting Robertson a lot, sometimes, you know, you kind of, that's my guy, I'm going to get him the football. Maybe that's what happened there. But the ball was tipped and it was picked off. Josh Kalu had the interception. The safety position is going to be fun watching that whole thing develop with A.J. Moore and Theo Jackson. We want to see more. Especially getting some of those early reps alongside Kevin Byard with Monty Hooker being out. I want to see how that whole thing falls out because I personally feel Theo Jackson is going to fall into that Dane Cruikshank role where he's the guy that you match up with tight ends. He's the guy that comes in. And if you remember Cruikshank at Arizona, he was a dime linebacker. And I remember talking to him a lot about that, just being used to that physicality that it requires, you know, to play linebacker in that dime type of package. He fit it well. Well, go figure. Theo Jackson played the star position at Tennessee, a position that asked you to do everything, but among that is playing in the box. So that's going to be good for that defense. I'm looking forward just overall just seeing how everything falls out. I think Todd Downing, Tim Kelly, that marriage there, the pass game coordinator and offensive coordinator, I think we're starting to see some really good things. Tannehill is able to push the football down the field. Defensively, they're working different blitz packages. We're obviously not going to see Simmons, probably not Autry, probably not Harold Landry, but it'll still be good. Rashad Weaver is a guy that you watch for out of Pittsburgh. If you remember the Atlanta preseason game, he dominated. I think it was two sacks he had. I want to see how they use his versatility because he's a guy come off the edge, but he also put his hand in the dirt. You could even bump inside to like a three technique at times. So there's a lot of versatility with him. I'm going to end it on this. Shakur Brown, watch him.
Yeah.
Watch him. He's a nickel. He could play outside, but he has a little bit of an advantage on these other guys in that he just finished the season in the USFL playing for the Pittsburgh Maulers. But he came right in, absorbed the defense, played fast right away, had some pass breakups. He actually picked Malik Willis off. For a while, he had the only interception in camp. He picked Willis off. Brandon Lewis fell on the route, and he was there. Pass ball bingo is right there, and he had a pick there. But he's gotten a series of pass breakups. Malik went to Reggie Robertson on the next play, and it was a touchdown on like a jump ball in the corner of the end zone. But nevertheless, Brown is another guy to watch. So this is going to be just, you know, a good opportunity, as we said, to see these guys in game situations. Even the punter, man, Ryan Stonehouse. He was booming him.
Yeah.
He was booming him last week, so we'll see how that works too. It all goes back to Treylon Burks. And, you know, with Treylon Burks, I want to bring back a segment that we normally use during the regular season, but it is only right that that we use it now, because, you know, here's my thing. With training camp or just with everything, I'm always about staying even keel, right? You don't get too high, you don't get too low. And sometimes we see things, we misread it, and it goes national, and now it's just a completely wrong narrative that's pushed out to the national audience. The folks here, because Titans fans are very smart, they know what's up. But you know what? Let me get the music, man. Blow the whistle. Blow the whistle. So this is a segment called Blow the Whistle, where every week I call something out. And you know what? I'm calling it out this week, man, because it's just ridiculous. NBC Sports Edge, I believe they call it.
Yeah.
Powered by Roto World. They saw a Mike Herndon. Mike Herndon, Paul Kaharsky.com columnist. Mike was at practice, and he made observations. And one of the things he said was that Treylon Burks lined up, he had to get redirected where to go. Look, man, been there, done that. Sometimes you break the huddle, and you're like, wait a minute, where am I? What route? It happens.
Yeah.
Right? So the quarterback naturally, hey, you're over here on the left. You're number one on this side. You're not over. Mm-hmm. That happens. Like a reporter doing his job, Mike Herndon reported that. He observed that. As receivers, yards after catch, we know that's huge, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're always told, run through the football. There's even a drill that they do specifically focusing on running through the football. There's a big emphasis on it. I guarantee you I say 8 out of 10 plays where a receiver catches the football, goes back, wide receiver coach is like, man, you need to run through the ball, man. Mm-hmm. We need those yards after the catch. Rob Moore said it to Treylon Burks.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. Mike Herndon saw it. He reported it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not blowing the whistle on Mike Herndon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At
no,
all.
No. He did his job. Yeah.
He reported it. Treylon Burks catching passes from Malik Willis, catching passes from Logan Woodside. Also catching passes from Ryan Tannehill. Yeah. Just because you're catching passes from Woodside and Willis, that doesn't mean you're not working with the first group.
Exactly, yeah.
So, Roto World or NBC Sports Edge, I'm blowing the whistle on you because you took this one tweet and blew it out of proportion, and now everybody across the country thinks that Treylon Burks isn't having a good camp. He has stacked multiple days. He is, yes, working with the twos and threes, but he's also worked with the ones. It's completely taken out of context. So pump the brakes on your fantasy football doubts and all of that stuff. Treylon Burks is still a guy that will be in the mix. Robert Woods, obviously. But that's something I had to do. And that's why I asked you to cue that music up. So we're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll pay these bills. We'll be right back with Run TMC. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot. Head online to freedomtireguys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at freedomtireguys.com.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
All right. The music fades. Oh, the lights are dimming. Here we go. And now, starting at point guard for your Seattle Supersonics, number 3, Dale Ellis.
And now, starting starring in the movie Jason's Lyric, Forrest Whitaker.
Hold up, man. You're not about to call me somebody that could be wide awake and sleep at the same time.
Man.
You're not about to do that.
Hey, he looked like he was working a graveyard shift. Just What's up, Doc? How you doing, man?
What's going on? Yeah, I'm good, man. You know, just another day, another dollar, doing what we do, man.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. I was looking at on Facebook and Instagram. You was kind of chopping shop with Fulton, the defensive back, man. What kind of conversation was that?
Oh yeah, I was asking him about what he was doing during the summer.
Man.
Yeah, he's had a pretty solid camp. Now, I know it's always fashionable to post when a DB gets beat. Traylon Burks got him, Westbrook and Kenny got him, but he's had his share of PBUs as well. So I think there's balance there, so we have to make sure we do that with our reporting. Christian, I think, is in good shape to be an outstanding corner in this league. So we'll see how that continues to work. And here we are, man. Preseason week one, Titans, Ravens. Ooh, this is going to be interesting, man. I heard some things that's going to really make this game a little bit more interesting, but just for you, I figured this was a good opportunity to reminisce. Your first preseason game when you first put on the uniform and the lights came on and you got the opportunity to show what you could do in a game situation. Who was that against? And let's get into some of your memories there.
Actually, it was against the Washington Redskins, and first of all, we kind of had like a joint practice, and then we actually had the game against them. And when I was sitting in the locker room and I was sitting there and I was just kind of reminiscing that all the hard work I put in and all the stuff that I went through, that it's actually about to start. And I wanted to go out there and show up on film. When I say show up on film, I want to make sure that I made plays to where every time they turned on the field, number 18, I was number 18 at the time that I switched to 81, but number 18 was consistently, showing up on film. And I remember a play this is goofy. It was fourth and 26, and we went for it. And I ran a curl, and it was up high, and I caught it, and I spun, and I went for 30 yards and made a first down. But here's the cool part of the whole thing, TD, is watching the defense run out on – this is a preseason game now – run out on the field and give me depth. And the offense gave me depth. So when you have – you make a play like that, and the defense run on the field, and you win, the vets over by making a big play like that, I wanted to show these guys that they can trust me.
Was that kind of the key for you rocketing up the depth chart, or how did that happen? Because I know you came in and you represented it, but how did that come up to where you got up the depth chart?
I just came in with an edge, TD. When I came out of Ohio State, we had Joey Galloway, we had Terry Glenn, we had a lot of great wide receivers, and that year Joey got drafted to the Seattle Seahawks. And everybody was talking about the good things that he was going to do. Mm. But then when I was coming in, when I came in with Houston Oilers / Titans, they had an offense that was a run and shoot. So you had a lot of receivers that were already, been playing. So they're like, well, he'll come in, he'll do special teams. And, he's a track guy trying to play football, all these things that I heard. So instead of me getting bitter, I chose to get better. So I knew that every opportunity that I had to catch the ball, every opportunity that I had to show up on film, I made it a point. I don't care if it was in 7-on-7. I don't care if it was in team. I don't care what it was. The way I was going to shoot up to the depth chart is play so well that they have to play me. And that's exactly what happened.
Did you have to square up with Darryl Green in that preseason game?
Ate his lunch, dog. No, but what's so funny is, when I went against him, he's a technician. He's fast. But I knew that I couldn't just beat him with speed alone because, your boy runs your dog runs a 4.2, a 4.1, on the track. So I knew what I had to do is I had to run routes. Les Stecko, when I first got in the league, he knew that I was raw a little bit, and he started teaching me how to run routes, lie with my eyes, chest of them at ease, and teach me those things. So I understood that, okay, I know I can't outrun him. I have to get his hips locked. So what I had to do is when I was at the line of scrimmage, I had a game plan to where if I had to run a slant, I knew I had to set him up and run a fade. Get him off the spot, get on my line, all that stuff that I did to make sure that I wasn't just going to beat him with speed alone. I had to beat him with technique.
What would be your words of advice? We'll shift this to what's going to happen with the Titans and Ravens. Traylon Burks, this is a guy that obviously is trying to elevate his way up the depth chart. Mm-hmm. What's the advice for him? Like if you had a conversation with him pregame, what would you tell him?
Just play. You know, and I know this sounds kind of simple. Just play ball, you know, because you don't want to get into a situation to where you start to put pressure on yourself. We always say this term, pressure bust pipes. You don't want to go out there and play so tight and so wound. And, you know, I'm being watched and all these things that you go out there and mess up. Just go out there and do what you did when you played against Alabama when the stage was big and, you know, you caught a screen and you took it 70 yards. Mm-hmm. You got to have that kind of like that same attitude of, you know what, this is just a football game. It's not a job. So, you know, if I was to give him some advice is, hey, dog, just go play. Have fun. Enjoy the thing. Smile. Laugh. And enjoy your teammates. That's the kind of advice that I would give him.
Who are some of the guys you're looking forward to? Because I know the receivers, you had said you wanted to kind of channel in on that. So I'm just going to give you the floor. Tell me, what are your thoughts?
Oh, man, I'm looking, you know, McMath. McMath has been doing well. Phillips is doing well. Fitzpatrick, Josh Malone, you know, I don't know, Robertson got hurt a little bit. But I just want to see who's going to separate themselves. I mean, because everybody's making plays. You know, the buzz around campus, you know, Kyle Phillips has just been killing people mm-hmm. one-on-one. That's great in one-on-one, but I want to see who separates themselves in game-time situations. When it's 3rd and 7, 3rd and 6, who's going to come up with the play? You know, who can Tannehill trust? Who's going to be in the right position? Who's not going to be afraid? Who's going to be consistent? Who's blocking? Who's hustling? All these things that you want to see. So with those 4 or 5 receivers that I named, I want to see who's going to separate themselves.
With Racy McMath, what do you think has been the key for him? Because all of a sudden, like, this dude is catching bombs all the time. I mean, Tannehill has hit him a few times. Malik Willis has hit him. Even Logan Woodside caught him on a nice comeback route, you know. So he's able to sell that 9 and then work his way back and, you know, do what he has to do there.
I just think it's understanding how to run routes, TD. You know, when he came in, everybody was talking about he was a speed guy and he was raw. You know, that's a good thing and a bad thing because you don't want to just be labeled as just a fast guy and run track but don't know how to run routes. He's understanding how to have chest over your knees. When I say chest over your knees, that means, you know, you're getting out of your cut real fast. So he's doing those things, just like you said, he burst out of the cut with the comeback. But understanding that you just can't outrun people in this league. You got to set people up the line of scrimmage. You got to run the route. You got to lie with your guys. All those things that we talk about in being a complete receiver. So I really take my hat off to him by him saying, you know what, I'm going to take the advice of Mike Vrabel. I'm going to take the advice of Ron Moore, the wide receiver coach, and start to apply it to my daily life. When I say my daily life, to where in OTAs I'm listening to coach, and mandatory meetings I'm listening to the receiver coach, and just taking it and apply it to what I need to do to get better. So I take my hat off to Racy McMath.
You always tell me how was it Webster Slaughter? He was had a big influence on you. It's just like the routes and everything like that. I think Robert Woods is a guy that these younger receivers can say will have a big influence on them. What is the significance, you know, having the luxury of having a guy like that you could just, hey, look, I want to see how to play the receiver position.
Yeah.
All I got to do is just watch him.
Yeah. And, TD, you said a key word is watch. You know, and I watched the first day I walked in, you know, I saw Webster Slaughter. He weighed about 105. He had his hat to the back. He had a gap in the tooth. I mean, just everything. He didn't even look like a receiver. He had on a small tank top. He had a little shorts. So I'm like, this is Webster Slaughter? But when that joker got on the field, he would tell Darrell Lewis, Marcus Robertson, Blaine Bishop what route he was running. And every time he would get open. The one thing I love that he did is he always sold the 9. When I say sold the 9, he always make sure that he thought that he was going deep. And he will break that thing off. He will stop at a dime, TD. And I first time I saw him run a comeback, I was like, woo. So I mimicked him. I watched him. And I said, you know what? I'm going to master my route running with him, with what he does.
What is it that you like about Woods?
Man, just savvy. I mean, he's just a savvy vet. He understands to where, say if I'm running a comeback, and it's sticky coverage. He knows how to do that little chicken wing and kind of push off without the referee seeing it and coming back to the ball. So it's those little innuendos to understanding to where, okay, I got a 9 route, I got a D route, and I feel, you know, the defense on me. I don't just put my hands out and start running. I put my hands out at the last moment. So little things like that of being a savvy vet and watching him run routes and watching him talk to Tannehill, it just shows you that he's just a complete wide receiver, man.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned the late hands because that's something that
you got
to be able to do. It's funny. I really like watching Woods in practice, especially like downtime. they're over there on special teams. He's with Rob Moore, and you see him just, and I posted a video a couple of days ago, just repetition, working releases, working top of the route stuff, and just so much attention to detail. And I think that's the thing that kind of sets the example for these younger guys, and especially for someone like Treylon Burks, who is bigger, you're going to be a target at the line of scrimmage. So you do have to know how to get off the ball cleanly and get into your route. And at the top of the route, the push-off, that's something that has kind of been an area of focus for the Titans just in working with Treylon Burks. Mm-hmm. What are some of the keys in being able to, you know, get that push-off? You mentioned the chicken wing, and I know that's something, but what are some of the keys to be able to get that push-off so that you can work your way back to the quarterback and set up that separation?
I mean, it starts at the line of scrimmage. And when I say starts at the line of scrimmage, you gotta get the guy off the spot. When I say get the guy off the spot, you gotta make him turn his hips opposite of where you're going. So now when you do that, now the DB's playing catch up. Now you're still in the nine, and he has to catch up with you. So now when he catches up to you, now you just use your body. It's kind of like basketball. You're positioning your body and kind of pushing him forward towards you, and then now you, when I say come and see me, that means beat me back to the sideline. So those are the little things that we're talking about, and those are the things that being a savvy vet, it makes him so good, because it's those little things that brings big dividends.
You had mentioned something a couple weeks ago when you saw one of my videos, Dontrell Hilliard, the route running.
Oh,
man. What impressed you about that? Because we're talking about a running back, right? But he was lining up and running routes like a receiver. In different, individual one-on-ones.
Yeah. Man, it was just what he did at the line of scrimmage, TD. You know, he had quick feet. But here's the thing. When you're talking about a running back running routes, they'll make one move and then just go and don't get back on your rail. When I say get back on your rail, your line is kind of, you know, the line, that imaginary line that you get when you get back on top of the defender. But when he was running that route against the DB, when he used his quick feet and used his shoulders and used his eyes, and got back on top of the linebacker, defensive back, it just shows you that he's not a running back. He's skilled at running routes, man. So it was just an eye opener, because you don't see too many backs that can, you know, do what he did. Is understanding that, yeah, I can run the ball. Yes, I can run, you know, outside zone. But to be flexed out and now run a route against a safety or a linebacker, it just shows you, man, that Todd Downing can do some special things with this kid.
Yeah, and there are some special things they'll be able to do. You figure he'll more than likely be that third down back. And, man, I would like to see them motion him out the backfield, put him in that slot, and let him work against whatever mismatch that may be. So we'll see how they allow that to execute. One last thing, because I know, you know, you saw a bit of McNair. I'm not making the comparison to Malik Willis, so let's not get that twisted.
Right.
But – just as far as the process, the developmental part of it, what, from what you've seen, was critical for McNair to get to where he got, and how can that apply to Malik Willis?
You know, I just, the one thing that I saw when Matt came out together is just trust the process, because a lot of people get frustrated and get mad and say, well, I don't want to listen to the coach and not pay attention to details. When I say pay attention to details, What is the offensive coordinator talking about when he's talking about, you know, reading defenses, take what the defense gives you, you know, don't make mistakes, all these things. I watch Mac, and I say this respectfully, I watch Steve McNair not understand coverages to understanding coverages, to know where your outlet is, to know when to throw the ball, to understand what the two safeties are doing, if it's open or closed, all those things that he struggled with when he got in. But once he understood what the safety was doing, once he understood where his outlet was, once he understood that they let the game come slow to you, then that's when he won the MVP. Now we got Malik Willis. He has to do the exact same thing. Don't get frustrated. Trust the process. Trust what Todd Downing's teaching you and the other coach, O'Hara?
Pat O'Hara, the QB coach.
Yeah, Pat O'Hara teaching you what to do when you're on the field. I think he can definitely be successful.
Yeah, and when you have a guy that's so talented, it's tough to get him to pull away. Like, you want him to showcase that talent and utilize it, but at the same time, you have to be able to process things. And I mentioned the talent because, man, they went 2-minute it was actually 50 seconds, like a minute, 50 seconds. And they're driving down the field. And they also did low red zone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything has to go faster there. And it just, like, that sense of urgency was created within them. But I say the talent because let me tell you something. He was on the left hash, and he threw a laser to Terry Godwin on the in the back of the right pylon.
Uh-huh.
So we're talking across the field, a laser, and Godwin. Ooh. And it was, you know, right as he broke, that ball was right there. And it was a touchdown. And then he showed really good anticipation on a throw to Dez Fitzpatrick. It was on a seam route. And it was, you know how you run that route and you got to break just inside the hash. And
yeah.
The ball has to be there before that safety could come murder you.
Uh-huh.
It was one of those throws, right? He threw it right before Fitzpatrick put that right foot or the left foot and cut inside. And it was a beautiful throw. So the talent is there. And it's just like when he is able to process things and everything goes right, it's a beauty.
And then another thing, and I'm going to close with this, is a lot of quarterbacks that are coming out of college throw to the receiver when they open.
Yeah. I talked to him about that, anticipating and throwing guys open.
Yeah.
100% right.
And then another thing, man, I was looking at Dance with the Stars, man.
Oh yeah.
And you know, some of my teammates, you know, that coach, they're like, man, you do the show with TD. I'm like, yeah.
Yep.
They was like, man, he looked like Gary Coven or Willis. I said, nah, man, he looks like Sam Cassell. And they're like, he's exactly right, coach.
It's crazy because they always get me with the same player too, man. They were like, hey, man, we were listening to the show and we saw a promo for it. I didn't know Tyrone Hill knew how to talk football like that.
Man, on that note, I'm out.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. I got that music on because it is Ladies First, and we're going to bring in one of my favorite ladies, my teammate, ESPN NFL insider, Diana Russini. Diana, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on? It's great to talk to you, Peruge, my favorite person that lives south of New Jersey. It's so close to the start of the season, but every time I look at the calendar, I'm like, all right, we still got like a month, but I feel like we're in full swing already.
Yeah, it does feel like we're in full swing a couple weeks into training camp, and here we are, stories just galore with the Titans. And I know you're extremely dialed in with this organization, so I wanted to bring you on just to, you know, get some of your takes. But let's start with this, because I saw you on Get Up this morning, and you were talking about how, you know, some of the executives that you spoke to felt that the joint practices are going to be really good because it breaks up the monotony. Can you just kind of expand on some of the feedback you got there?
Oh, yeah. It's so interesting because sometimes I think the way the fan perceives preseason versus players and coaches can be a little different. Cause I know just, I'm a fan too, even though I cover the sport. I have to pay attention to some of these games and they're not as exciting and fun. And the players kind of have the energy too. So these joint practices really give teams true game speed situations, things that they can work on. Coaches, well, I know for a fact, both head coaches, they start chatting 6 months out, 5 months out from the summer to start going over schedule. How do we want this to look? Coordinators, they hop on calls as well. They discuss some drills that they want to do. That way everyone's on the same page and it looks organized out there. But also, so everyone's getting the most amount of work. So you have that layer of the fact that you're getting real football and you're really able to polish up on those fundamentals, on the technique, on all those phrases we hear all the time over and over and over again from coaches. And players have always shared with me that they look forward to the joint practice because it just breaks it up. Right now, everyone's hitting that training camp wall. It feels like they've been out there in the sun doing the same things against the same people, you know, for months. And granted, it hasn't been that long, but just a change of scenery, some new players facing you know, different defenders, different players on offense is always a nice welcome and just really is a shot in the arm, you know, to a lot of these teams. And then finally, Teron, I'll never forget this. And I know you've had these moments covering the NFL. I will never forget covering the AFC Championship game in 2018. It was the Jacksonville Jags playing the New England Patriots in Foxborough. And I had covered the Patriots at that time for about 3 years in a row. And you always know what you're going to get with them after a game in terms of what they're going to share in terms of scheme and why they made certain decisions on defense. And if you recall in the AFC Championship game, they just did a really good job on shutting down the Jags offense. Like the Jacksonville had no answers. So when I was talking to the players on defense, they shared with me that Bill Belichick had them go back and watch film from the joint practice that they had with the Jags back in August. And what they did was they studied the receivers and they studied their movements and their decisions even or their tendencies. And they were able to pretty much get a scouting report that was even better because they faced them already. So I've always, I always think of that when I see these joint practices of, well, you better be careful. You may not want to show too much. So there's a lot of advantages, but I still think there's a little disadvantage too.
That's crazy. I never would have thought of that, but hey, I mean, that's a Patriots thing, right? You take advantage of every opportunity you have. When you look at this Titans team, obviously a lot of Patriots ties with Mike Vrabel and John Robinson. This training camp, what would you say is the biggest story? There's so many to choose from.
You know, I think it sounds very low-hanging fruit, but you just can't downplay the receiver position after losing A.J. Brown. It is still, in my opinion, the top three biggest stories of the offseason. It dominated draft night. Dominated. And that's supposed to be a night about the rookies, yet a trade that, you know, we could go back and forth of whether or not we expected it. I never believed it would get that far. I really thought they'd figure it out, especially now that you're seeing the other receivers that are represented by the same agent and, you know, they all seem to have
Toy Dandy got it. He got his guys paid.
He got his guys paid, and everyone seems happy. And AJ, I know, is adjusting to Philly pretty well from what I understand and from having conversations there. By the way, and maybe I don't know if this makes Titans fans feel better, but it hasn't been the easiest transition for him. This wasn't something he stepped into, and despite what we see on social media, him and Jalen Hurts, where he looks like, you know, he's playing with his best friend and he's in heaven. That isn't the whole story. Mm-hmm. It's taken a beat for him to get adjusted. And Teron, I don't need to tell you what it's like to play in Philly, at least what it's like to be in that city. And I do think that that's going to be another layer to this for AJ as the season goes, dealing with, I'm allowed to call them those people because I'm married to one,
right?
But those people. Yeah. You know, they're on a different level. And Titans fans are the best, and they're tough. They're tough critics of the game and of their players, but at the same time, I wouldn't describe Titans fans as being brutal. And that's just the Philly way. So to me, the receiving group right now is really interesting. On, you know, look, we're all gonna look at see who the replacement is going to be. How do you replace AJ Brown? And I think the answer, whether John Robinson wants to hear it or not, is you just don't.
Right.
You don't. That level of talent at his age, he hadn't even peaked yet. You're not going to find that right now. And it's going to take some time. So I think, you know, just keeping an eye at how they're going to make up for that. And, you know, they're going to do everything to make sure Burks plays well and understands the offense and is in shape and has all the health, we'll call it health care, that he could possibly need to stay healthy and on the field. And maybe, and this isn't the best way to look at it, maybe have the fingers crossed that it could work out.
Yeah, and you did a great job digging out that A.J. Brown trade. That was an awesome job by you getting that out there. You mentioned Burks, and obviously he's on the other side of Brown. He's had his difficulties to start, but training camp has gone well. What have you, just kind of outside looking in, gotten on Burks? Like, what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I will say, if you asked me this question when I saw you last in person,
yeah,
which we witnessed it together,
oh,
I probably would be sounding the alarms and saying, you know, I consider John Robinson to be a top GM in the NFL. And I know after I saw that rookie camp, I changed my rankings in my head. I'm thinking, is this going to be part of his, part of his time here in Tennessee, is making a really bad decision in trading away a top receiver for a rookie that looked like he was lost. And I can be, I've always been patient with young players. I've been doing this long enough, and so have you, to know it takes time. And I wasn't really giving him that for some reason, maybe because I was really expecting to be blown away,
mm-hmm.
Knowing that they made that decision to trade AJ and showed very little patience in handling the business side of it. They were ready to move on. They didn't want to deal with the drama. So when I saw Treylon out there, you know, with his hands on his head and huffing and puffing and hands on the knees and the shoulders being iced because he's breathing the incorrect way because he's overcompensating for the fact that his cardio isn't good. I mean, it's all basic sport stuff. It's not even technical football things. It's like anyone that who tries to be in shape knows, like I was watching, like I have been there. We've all been there where you're just not in shape and you can't keep up. And the humidity that week was tough. So to go from that to where we're seeing now, and I had heard some really good things right before training camp started. I was trying to find out from the player's perspective who had worked out with him, knowing that they would probably share a little bit more than the coaches would right now, because coaches don't want to say anything until they see some action on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And the players are saying, like, he's better. Like, he's fit. His commitment is different. And there was just a little bit of growing pain. So now here we are. We're into camp. It's mid-August almost. I've swung a little bit back a little. I think he's much better than he was in the spring. I don't think he's lights out. I think this is going to be a process. And
right.
I think, you know, the challenge is going to be on Ryan Tannehill and really, you know, the rest of this offense in showing that patience. And I'm not sure how long Mike Vrabel is going to have the patience for it, because he doesn't really seem to be one that has tons of it.
Yeah. And losing AJ hurt Mike Vrabel. It definitely did. You know it hurt him, and it showed when
I asked Mike that at the last time I saw him in person. I had done an interview with him real quick on the side of the field to just talk about this rookie class and what he made of it, and I asked him if it hurt him. I went a little too hard on the football side of it. I was talking about the offense, and I could just tell from the way he changed the conversation from AJ, from him as a player,
right,
on the field,
personal level,
his contributions to the man.
Yeah,
you know, he talked about his daughter Jersey, and you know, you could tell he knew this man very well,
mm-hmm.
and had spent time. I think it hurt, but there is Mike Vrabel is probably one of the best in the business at keeping it business. I can tell you that. Just he just looks at this game like whatever you need to do for what's best for the team. That's always the bottom line with him. So I think as much as it may stung and maybe hurt his heart a little, I think he's moved on.
Yeah. At this point, it definitely moved on. But I know, like you said, when it happened, I know he was gutted. Speaking of Mike Vrabel, this is a guy that won the Coach of the Year. How do you think he responds to that? How do you think he follows up this season with everything that's at stake?
You know, Vrabel is one of these coaches, for whatever reason, I always find on the national level, he's still very underrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I joke sometimes, and I've said this to his face, that I think sometimes his actual physical makeup hurts him because we have these stigmas of what people look like. And because he's a large human being and played the game, you immediately think that he must be dumb, which I know sounds mean and harsh and unfair, but I think it's kind of human nature. You just do it. You just figure out how smart could this guy be. Well, turns out he's really, really, really smart. And, you know, whenever I've had conversations with other coaches, especially coaches outside the division that don't know him and they know I cover the Titans, that is always the most common question I get. What is Mike Vrabel like? What is he like? What is he like to cover? What do the players say about him? Is he a jerk? Is he come on, you know, is he like Dan Campbell? Is he like John Harbaugh? Like, what's his demeanor? Is he a Robert Saleh like hype guy? And he's really nothing like any of them. I tend to describe him as he's certainly very Patriot way. While he'll never pound the table, and I don't want to say he's not proud of that, but he's never come off as someone that is going to force in a conversation or make sure that everybody in the room knows that he played for New England.
Right.
It's assumed, and we all know it. But I think he likes to be detached from it. I mean, and maybe it's just because of how it ended, and you know, there when he was traded away to Kansas City, maybe there's some bitterness there. But I don't, you know, whether he likes it or not, he has so much New England blood, and I think that's the advantage he has, and that's why he's so great at the details. When players tell me about his the night before meetings and the things he talks about, and the time he puts into the film, and the time he puts into presentations for entertainment. I mean, just crazy things, and you hear about it from so many other coaches. Sean McVay is a type of coach. You hear so many positive things about Sean's ability to connect, his brilliance, the work he puts into it. And Vrabel is the same way. It's the same. They're all cut from the same cloth. They're obsessive and they're passionate, and they make it first. And obviously, Tennessee made the right choice in hiring him, and certainly, I believe he deserved to be coach of the year after what they were able to get through without Derrick Henry and win all the games. But now the question is what? What are they? And they are a team to me that I definitely think about a lot. And like, I actually asked that question, like, what are they? Because I remember last season during this time talking to Buck about it on the sideline, and I said, Buck, they're going to be so good this year. He's like, are you crazy? There's no way. Obviously, they came off that great season the year before. He's like, I just remember going, they've got the blueprint, the foundation, the culture, all these things that other teams I cover do not have. They may have better quarterbacks. They've got better corners. They may have better coordinators, but they've got the right stuff here, and this team mirrors their head coach, who's going to continually push the same messaging. And while it gets old and it could be stale at times, it works. And he's proven that. And that's why Vrabel always, from my observations, has always gravitated toward those players that buy into it.
Mm-hmm.
And buy into what he's saying, because he needs those kind of guys. He needs the Jeffrey Simmons, the Kevin Byards, to spread that same belief in what they can do, because at the end of the day, they're going to go back to what they were in 2019. They were just a bunch of street rats. And I think that's what they're going to be this year. And I've heard tons of great things about Ryan Tannehill too, this camp. So
yes,
they could have a bounce back year.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It definitely is. I feel the arrow is still pointing up for them. And hey, I wanted to point up, you know, that's more exposure for us. So definitely needed to work that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. They've grown so much since John and Mike really have taken over as a tandem. You know, and obviously Derrick Henry being there and Ryan Tannehill in that trade coming over and taking over for Marcus really exploded and made them an important team that people pay attention to. But it takes effort and work to get that attention that a team like the Cowboys like the Giants in the area where I live in New Jersey get. You know, but it's growing. It's growing. And the more accomplishments they get, and, you know, I hate to keep bringing it up, but, you know, they don't throw three interceptions, or Ryan doesn't throw three interceptions against the
right.
Bengals.
You're right.
You know, like, who knows where they are. And,
yeah.
And man, that may be the game that I think, as someone that covers the team as much as I do, and you covers them every single minute of the day, like, we're never going to forget that game.
Yep, it is unforgettable. But you are unforgettable also, and I appreciate you coming on. It's always good. And I do want to take a moment just to thank you, you know, for the support that you always provide for me. Like, it's encouraging, and it's good to have, you know, someone in your corner the way you are in mine. So I appreciate that, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that on the air, because it obviously has to be mentioned.
You're a kind soul, and while I do love you as a person, at the end of the day, I respect the hell out of you. So you make it really easy to support you, because you're really good at your job, and I learn a lot from you. So I'm lucky to call you a colleague and a friend.
There you have it right there. Diana Russini, how can you not love her? I know I love her, so appreciate you coming on. So that was Diana Russini. Definitely appreciate her coming on. Always great to talk shop with her. You got a little Run TMC today. We dialed it back to way back when Chris Sanders had his first preseason game. Definitely appreciate Chris coming on too. And David, appreciate you making this thing happen, man. We got this rolling. We're getting new segments in, so that's always a good thing.
Exactly.
Got my guy Nate Floyd Ingram, Cheney University, representing my teammate from back in the day. Always good to get an opportunity to catch up there too, man. And last but not least, appreciate each of you for tuning in. Definitely enjoy the games this weekend. It is finally a game day, so enjoy that. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your quality podcast. Search Talking with TD. First, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.